Welcome, everyone. I ask that the recording start so we can begin our session. Again, I thank all of you for dialing in or connecting to our Adobe Connect room for this policy update webinar, the 12th of June. This is the second session we're presenting so that we take advantage and help to attract more people in the Asia Pacific, more to their time zone, so that we can engage you in our discussion on the policy activities at ICANN 50 in London. Greetings. My name is David Olive. I'm Vice President for Policy Development Support, and I have the policy team here to provide an update to you on some of the activities in the policy area that will be taking place at our ICANN 50 meeting in London. In Singapore, that was another busy meeting, the last ICANN meeting. The policy team supported 140 sessions for the various supporting organizations and advisory committees, and that was really in support of your great activity and work during the ICANN meetings and in between those ICANN meetings to present ideas and inputs on policy development or policy advisory matters. And so we thank you for that. The focus for ICANN 50, in addition to much of the working group's activities and meetings, we'll be focusing on, of course, the ICANN accountability process, the transition of the NTIA stewardship of the IANA functions. There will be a high-level government meeting with the GAC, and we'll learn a little more about that in our presentation. Another big event for the at-large community is their summit, the second at-large summit. And in addition, there will be a Commonwealth DNS forum just before the opening of the ICANN conference. Other highlights for that week will be obviously the big welcoming session on Monday, the constituency day where the stakeholders and constituency groups meet amongst themselves and with the board of directors to exchange information and ideas and ask questions about activities. The gala performance, the gala dinner will be held on Wednesday, and the culmination will be a public forum and a board meeting on the last day, the Thursday of that week. I just wanted to briefly go into the activities of our policy development team as we support policy recommendations that are formed and refined by the ICANN community, by your participation, through its supporting organizations and influenced by the advisory committees. All, of course, are combined of volunteers from many countries in our bottom-up, open, and transparent process. As you know, each of the supporting organizations has its own specific process to conduct policy development, and those are detailed in the bylaws of ICANN in the various annexes describing the work of the GNSO, the CCNSO, and the ASO. So with that, we also provide the most recent activities expected in London with these groups. And I also like to show this infographic, which talks about the many activities of ICANN, policy development being one of them, an important one, but also our coordination of the domain name system, contractual compliance, and our operations. The goals of this webinar are as follows. We want to make sure that you are updated on current work and encourage your participation in the various issues that are going to be talked about in London. Review issues in some detail, why they're important to you and why you should take an interest in them. Also talk about upcoming initiatives and opportunities for you to provide further public comment into the various processes. Also answer any questions and solicit your feedback. The webinar hashtag, as you see, is right here at ICANN Policy, and we hope that you can follow us. The topics covered in particular for the generic names supporting organization are on this screen at the moment. and we'll get the details from our experts in a minute. Obviously, we'll also look at some of the work within the country code supporting organization, the address supporting organization, as our supporting groups, as well as the advisory committees. In particular, you'll see some of the activities and work of the Root Server Systems Advisory Committee, obviously the Security and Stability Advisory Committee, the GAC Advisory Committee, including the high-level ministerial meeting planned, as well as the work of the At-Large Advisory Committee, and in particular, their summit that will be taking place in London. With that, I wanted to just quickly go through some housekeeping before I turn to you. Please, if you have a question, put it into the chat, and we will make every effort to answer it quickly. And at the end of the session, we will have a question and answer period. We'll be using the assisted operator who will help us. So you would be asked to press star 1, give your name, and you'll be put in the queue for answering any questions. And we'll have that at the very end of the session. So with that, I want to turn it over for GNSO policy issues to the Senior Director, Marika Konings. The floor is yours. Marika?
Thank you very much, David. Hello, everyone. Thank you for joining us today. As David said, my name is Marika Konings. I'm based in the ICANN office in Brussels and a Senior Policy Director and team leader for the GNSO. We'll first be focusing on some of the topics under the discussion in the generic name supporting organization, or also known as GNSO. As we only have limited time today, we've decided to focus our part of the presentation on those items where there is either a milestone imminent or an opportunity to provide input, or a call for volunteers that is or will open shortly, noting that we currently have over 15 projects active in the GNSO. At the end of this overview, we'll also provide you with a brief update on those activities where there's no imminent milestone, but for which you can expect one in the near future, or those that have activities ongoing in London, so that if you're interested, you can attend there and then hear more about their status. Well, first, hand it over to my colleague Lars Hoffman to talk to you about the inter-registrar transfer policy.
Thank you, Marika, and hello to everybody. My name is Lars Hoffman. I work in the Brussels office, and among one or two other things, I support the IRTP Part D PDP working group. I'm sorry. The IRTP, or Inter-Registrar Transfer Policy, is a consensus policy that dates back to the year 2004. And it provides a straightforward mechanism to transfer domain names from one registrar to another. The policy is currently under review, and this Part D is supposed to be, in fact, the final round of provisions. And although very few perceive the IRTP as the GNSO's most exciting policy, inter-registrar transfers are actually still the number one area of consumer complaints received by ICANN compliance, underlying that despite all, it is clearly a very important policy. The IRTP Part D working group is chartered to address 6 specific issues. These address a variety of different items, such as reporting requirements for registrars, the accessibility of the Transfer Dispute Resolution Policy, or TDRP, the question over the continued need for forms of authorization, FOAs for short, as part of the transfer procedure, and also penalty structures in case of non-compliant registrars. The working group published its initial report in March this year. It's been out for public comment, and in fact, the reply period closed late last April. The working group received 4 detailed comments, and although they were very supportive in general of the working group's 13 draft recommendations, 2 issues, namely the proposal to abandon registries, the first level dispute providers, as the first level dispute providers under the TDRP, and the proposal to maintain FOAs, those 2 issues or comments those 2 recommendations were subject to conflicting comments. The working group has been meeting during the past few weeks trying to incorporate all the comments received and is in the process at the moment of reviewing these two issues that I just mentioned in particular. The working group is, of course, meeting in London, where its members will discuss any outstanding issues and finalize their recommendations. And if all goes well, the final report is then expected to be submitted to the GNSCO Council shortly after the London meeting. Providing the Council adopts the group's work, a board report will be published, and the final report will go back out for public comment just before it's then considered by the ICANN board. And finally, you can find more information through these links. Did I go on too far? I apologize. There we go. You can find more information through these links that will lead you to the group's wiki page and to the initial report. And if you're in London, please join us on Monday at 1:30 p.m. in the Thames Suite for what will most likely be the very last face-to-face IRTP meeting. So we hope to see you there. That's all from me. Thank you very much for indulging me. I apologize for the cough, and over to you, Mary.
Thank you, Lars. Hello, everybody. My name is Mary Wong. I'm a Senior Policy Director with ICANN, and like Lars and Marika, I primarily support the GNSO, or the Generic Name Supporting Organization. I'm based in the United States, working from home, although I'm originally from Singapore. It's my privilege to take you through a number of the other active projects now in the GNSO. As Marika mentioned earlier, there's a bunch more that's going on, and the ones that I'm highlighting here, like what Lars just did, really focuses on the issues or the milestones that we think will be of interest to the community going up to London. The first is a cross-community working group. So this is not a purely GNSO working group. It is a group that for this current objective was co-chartered by the GNSO and the CCNSO, the Country Code Name Supporting Organization. And this particular CWG was tasked by both councils to develop a framework of operating principles for future cross-community working groups, or CWGs. As a number of people know, there is a need for such a uniform framework because collaboration across ICANN's different supporting organizations and advisory committees, or SOs and ACs, is becoming increasingly important, is occurring more frequently, but a clear issue is that each SO or AC has its own mission, remit, and scope, and a number of SOs and ACs also have very different operating rules and procedures. That is not to say that there have been no CWGs or there have been no successful CWGs. There have been quite a few, as a matter of fact, although we don't have the ability to go through all of them on this slide. Nonetheless, to date, there has not been a uniform framework of principles for chartering these CWGs, for governing their operations, their decision-making methodologies, follow-up, and so forth. So in 2012, the GNSO drafted an initial framework for discussion with the other SOs and ACs and invited feedback. In 2013, the CCNSO provided a set of very detailed feedback and suggestions, and so at this point, the CCNSO and the GNSO collaborated, and in March 2014, at the Singapore meeting, approved a charter for the CWG that I'm now speaking about to take forward that initial work. You see on this slide the objective for this CWG. And at the moment, the CWG has started to meet, and what it's doing is analyzing previous CWG efforts, their chartering, their operations, their outcomes, difficulties, strengths, and so forth, and with the goal to produce at least a proposed final framework for community discussion within the next few months. So hopefully that gives you some flavor of the importance of the work of the CWG. As I said, this is co-chartered by the CCNSO and GNSO councils, but it is open to all SOs and ACs, and I'm pleased to say that there are participants from other SOs and ACs besides the two chartering organizations. If you're interested in the work, either in joining the CWG or following the work, there's a number of things that I hope you will do. One is, of course, attend either remotely or in person the CWG session at ICANN 50 in London on the Monday, the 23rd of June. Here we also have some links to the workspace that contains a lot of the background documentation as well as the current documents under consideration by the CWG. So that's one of the numerous topics and projects underway in the GNSO. Another is a GNSO working group that is engaged in a policy development process, or PDP. And this particular PDP concerns the accreditation of privacy and proxy services. Some of you may already know of this group because this group was chartered some months ago. But for the benefit of everyone, I'll just go quickly through the background and why this is an important topic. As most people know, registrars are accredited by ICANN and operate under a contract with ICANN. That's called the Registrar Accreditation Agreement, or the RAA. The newest form of RAA, the 2013 RAA, was approved by the ICANN board in June of last year. The important background to this is that the negotiations for that RAA included a number of topics identified as high priority topics by the ICANN community. And as it turned out, at the end of the negotiations, the single issue that was identified as outstanding and not fully addressed by the 2013 RAA is the use and the accreditation of privacy and proxy services. At this point, I should note that privacy and proxy services in this context is relevant to the use of the WHOIS system, which is the globally accessible public database or data directory for GTLD registration data. It's possible in the WHOIS to use or engage a privacy service where some of the registrant's contact details will be hidden from publication. It's also possible to use a proxy service where the actual registrant will be the service and you as the user of the domain will be licensed that from the proxy service. So where privacy services mask some of the registrant's contact details, proxy services basically has the registration in a completely different entity altogether. ICANN has previously committed to creating an accreditation program for such providers, both privacy and proxy services. And although I said that the 2013 RAA does not fully address the issue of accreditation or indeed the use of these services, there is a temporary specification in the 2013 RAA, and it's temporary in the sense that it has a stop date of January 1st, 2017, or the launch of ICANN's accreditation program, whichever comes first. Parallel to all of this, the board requested the GNSO to initiate a PDP on the remaining issue from the RAA negotiations, which I've mentioned is the accreditation and use of privacy and proxy services. The working group was formed, and there is a fairly detailed charter, which you can find in the links on the next slide, with a number of questions covering several categories, some of which are listed on this slide. These cover very general issues relating to the policy behind the program, to registration, to the provision of contact points for abuse reporting, relay and review procedures, and so forth. The aim of the working group is to produce an initial report for public comment by early 2015, and is meeting weekly to try to meet that goal. If you'd like further information, and of course, if you'd like to get involved and participate, you can, as with the other groups that we're talking about today, attend the working group session at the London meeting, again, either in person or remotely. And this particular session is planned to be a community session for you to provide feedback to the working group on some of its charter questions. You see here links also to the workspace and some further background documentation. Another topic that I've been asked to speak to you about is actually linked to the topic that follows this in a way that I hope I'll make clear. This particular one, the protection of IGO and INGO identifiers in all GTLDs, is a policy development process, or a PDP, that commenced a while ago and, in fact, is nearing completion. Before I go into talk about it, I should note that IGO in this case stands for International Governmental Organizations, which status-wise are international organizations formed by and between governments. INGO means International Non-Governmental Organizations, and this PDP covers both types of entities. And in terms of identifiers, this PDP covers either their names or their acronyms, the short form abbreviations, or both. The other point I want to note is that the scope of this PDP was to extend to all GTLDs. That means the so-called legacy GTLDs like .com, as well as new GTLDs delegated under ICANN's current new GTLD program. So it was a fairly expansive and ambitious PDP initiated in October of 2012. And the reason was to evaluate the need to protect the names or acronyms of IGOs and INGOs, including two named INGOs, the Red Cross Movement and International Olympic Committee. And as I mentioned earlier, at both in both legacy and new GTLDs, but also both at the top level, meaning to the right of the dot, as well as the second level, meaning to the left of the dot. In parallel with the background to this PDP, the GAC, or the Government Advisory Committee, about whom we'll hear a little bit more later on from my colleague Olaf Nordling, had also issued formal advice in the form of its formal communiques issued at the end of every ICANN meeting, asserting the need to protect IGOs and the named INGOs at the top and second level, and certainly at least in the new GTLD program. As a partial result, alongside the PDP, certain interim or temporary protections were put in place for these organizations at the direction of the ICANN board pending the GNSO's development of recommendations. What happened was that a year or so after the initiation of this fairly ambitious PDP, the working group reached consensus on over 20 recommendations, all of which were unanimously adopted by the GNSO Council, who then forwarded the recommendations to the ICANN board for their consideration. The ICANN board in February acknowledged receipt of the recommendations, and because there were some differences between the GAC advice on the topic and the GNSO's consensus recommendations, the board directed its new GTLD program committee to develop a proposal for future board consideration that would take both into account. This proposal was developed and sent, and more recently, after the Singapore meeting in April of 2014, the ICANN board proceeded to adopt some of the GNSO's consensus recommendations, and these were the ones that are deemed not inconsistent with GAC advice. This is a fairly important point because of the next topic that I'll speak on a little while later on. So that's where we are in terms of recent developments with the PDP regarding protection of IGO and INGO identifiers at the top and second level in all GTLDs. Because the board has acted to adopt some of the recommendations, an implementation review team is being formed to address implementation plans and actions for those adopted recommendations, which will involve, amongst other things, consideration of the interim protections I had mentioned were already put in place. And there's a need also to analyze the implication, not just for the new GTLDs being delegated, but for the so-called legacy GTLDs as well. The board has resolved also to continue to facilitate dialogue between the GAC and the GNSO to resolve the remaining differences, meaning those GNSO recommendations that have not yet been adopted. And here we note that these mostly relate to the issue of protection for IGO acronyms, again, the short form abbreviations, and certain identifiers relating to the Red Cross movement. This actually will bring me to the next topic, which is another PDP that is built on the outcome of this one for that specific topic. But before I speak to that, here are some links for some further information, including the recommendations from the GNSO and the various board resolutions that I've just mentioned. Coming now, therefore, to the one specific PDP that I had noted as being built on the topic that I've just spoken of, the expansive PDP on protection of IGO and INGO identifiers in all GTLDs at the top and the second level. This one is narrower and more specific, and it's built on that one because one of the consensus recommendations from that prior PDP working group was that the GNSO request an issue report on a very specific issue. And the issue is in relation to so-called curative rights protection measures. Examples of curative rights protection measures, which may be quite well known to many of you, would be the Uniform Dispute Resolution Policy, or the UDRP, which has been in place since 1999. It is the oldest of ICANN's various consensus policies. And a new Uniform Rapid Suspension Procedure, or the URS, that was developed for the new GTLD program. There are differences between the two procedures, but the URS was built on the UDRP. Both are curative in the sense that they apply when a third-party registrant has already registered a domain name at the second level, not the top level, but at the second level to the left of the dot that is identical or very closely similar to a protected trademark or, in this particular case, possibly an identifier of an IGO or an INGO. If that were to happen, then the complainant, in the case of the UDRP and URS, the trademark owner, in this particular case of the PDP, possibly, should the recommendations go this way, the protected organization would then rely on one of these policies to try to cure the problem. This is contrasted or can be contrasted to so-called preventative protections, which would be in the form, for example, of reserved names. And there are some reserved names in the domain name system. And when there is a reserved name, it means that a third-party registrant cannot register that domain or anything like that at all. And there lies the difference between curative and preventative protections. There are particular issues for IGOs and INGOs, which was recognized by the prior working group, which led to this particular issue report, and I've highlighted some of the more primary reasons on this slide by their status and by the fact that they simply, for the most part, may not even be trademark owners. The current curative rights protection measures, the UDRP, the URS, really aren't a fantastic fit for these organizations. So as I mentioned, the prior PDP working group had noted that the GNSO Council should request an issue report to scope out the problem and to recommend next steps. I should note here that in the GNSO, an issue report is a required mandatory step preceding a possible PDP. So before the GNSO Council can vote to initiate a PDP, there needs to be an issue report. The preliminary version was published for public comment in March. Quite a number of public comments were received and analyzed, with the result that the final issue report was submitted to the Council for them to vote on whether to initiate this particular specific PDP last month. This slide summarizes what some of the grounds might be, or sorry, what the scope of the PDP might be. Most of this is in the issue report along with other recommendations and information. And it is a fairly limited PDP, as I mentioned, built on the work of the prior working group. So limited, for example, to only those identifiers of those organizations that have been highlighted for protection by the prior working group. I should note at this point that when the final issue report was given to the GNSO Council in May, there was some consideration and discussion, with the result that at its meeting just last week, the 5th of June, the GNSO Council did vote to initiate a PDP along the lines recommended by the final issue report. What is currently under discussion, however, is the scope of the working group and the charter that will determine the work of the working group. The Council is currently discussing that particular issue and is expected to vote on the adoption of a charter for the working group in its meeting in London. So hopefully you will keep an eye on that And with that, I will hand things back to our team leader, Marika, to talk to you about other GNSO projects. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Mary. And as mentioned at the start, we'll now look briefly at some of the other GNSO projects for which there is no immediate milestone, but which are nevertheless still important and for which you can expect updates or discussions in London. So looking at the first one, there's a policy development process currently ongoing on translation and transliteration. This working group is specifically looking at the question whether GTLD directory contact information should be translated and or transliterated. And if so, how that should happen, who should bear the cost, is feasible or not. The working group is aiming to deliver its initial report for public comment by October and has planned a face-to-face meeting in London, which is open to anyone interested. The Data and Metrics for Policymaking Working Group is a non-PDP effort, which is looking at standard methodologies of reporting and metrics that would assist fact-based policy development and decision-making. And they're also looking into assessing, once a policy has been implemented, if it did what it was intended to do, and if not, you know, how that can be addressed. The working group is currently in the process of reviewing previous GNSO efforts in relation to data and metrics used and is expected to continue this conversation during its face-to-face meeting in London, which is scheduled for Thursday morning. Similarly, the Policy and Implementation Working Group is reviewing past GNSO efforts which, with the aim to assist in developing lessons learned that can be applied to its recommendations that are intended to address questions related to policy implementation in a GNSO context. The working group aims to deliver its initial report for public comment by the ICANN meeting in Los Angeles in October of this year and has also scheduled a face-to-face meeting in London to continue its deliberations and it will also provide a status update to the GNSO community and answer any questions that there might be. And that session takes place on Wednesday afternoon. So although not a project initiated by the GNSO, but as a requirement under the ICANN bylaws, I also wanted to briefly mention the work that has commenced in preparation of the GNSO review, which is expected to officially kick off on 1st of July of this year. A GNSO review working party has been formed in the meantime, and it's acting as a liaison between the Board's Structural Improvements Committee, or SIC, which is responsible for managing the review, as well as the independent examiner, which is still to be appointed. Which will be conducting part of our review. The working party will also have a meeting in London to further continue its preparatory work, which includes the preparation of questions for the 360 review, which is anticipated to be part of the review process. So I think this gives you hopefully a good overview of what's going on in the GNSO at the moment. As others have noted as well, you know, there will be opportunity at the end to ask questions live. But in the meantime, if you have any questions, please feel free to post those in the chat, and we'll do our best to answer those. And with that, I'll hand it over to my colleague, Bart Boswinkel.
Thank you, Marika. I will now introduce you to some of the hot topics in the CCNSO and which will be discussed at the London meeting. So it will change the pace and the substance a little bit. The focus will be on the framework of interpretation, the IANA stewardship transition process and ICANN's accountability process, and a little bit on the, and I'll discuss a little bit on the cross-community working group on use of names of countries and territories, and highlight some of the other sessions. Looking at the framework of interpretation and the framework of interpretation working group, it is probably interesting to realize that something that is very different from what you've just heard from Marika, Mary, and from Lars, for a couple of reasons. First of all, this is not a policy development process, but it is an interpretation of an existing policy. The CCNSO, contrary to the GNSO, doesn't run very much policy development processes. Up to now, they've only run two in its 10 years of existence. So that's one reason why it's interesting. The second one, although it dates back from to 2010, it was one of the early examples of a successful cross-community working groups, not only in the level of participation, but more importantly, is that if you look at the structure, it is very clear that, say, whatever comes out of this working group in terms of recommendations, the recommendations need to be adopted by both the CCNSO and the GAC, so they need to support the recommendations before they will be sent off to the ICANN board. And so realize this is a working group not focusing, not a policy development process. And the third reason why it's important, and that's to do with the substance of it, it is at the core of CCTLD land. It is about delegation and redelegation of CCTLDs. So if you would look at the topics and the substantive discussions, they're all about, say, the role of local internet community, revocation or unconsented redelegations, etc., and on IANA reporting. So it's very much on the core of the CCNSO policy remit. I will not touch. I will not go into the substance of it because it will take too much time. I just want to highlight where the working group is right at right now. First of all, the working group itself has reached full consensus on, I would say, the framework of interpretation itself. But it needs to translate this framework into recommendations to the ICANN board, and it's currently discussing these recommendations. It had hoped to complete its work prior to the London meeting, but there is still some substantive discussion ongoing, and this working group will meet on Thursday morning from 9 till 12 in order to trying to resolve some of the issues they've encountered over the last couple of weeks. So that's where the where the framework of interpretation working group is right now. A second hot topic in the CCNSO world, and not just the CCNSO world, but probably in the broader community as well, and especially also in the broader CCTLD community, is around the IANA stewardship transition process and ICANN's accountability process. The CCNSO Council has made some submissions. They are available online. But for those who are interested in this topic and want to see and learn more about the CCTLD perspective and what is relevant for them, in London there will be two sessions, one on Tuesday during Constituency Day, which is focused on ICANN's accountability process, and this will be conducted in the format of an interview session, trying to explore the different perspectives on ICANN's accountability and ICANN's accountability process and how it relates to, for example, the Net Mondial Statement and to ATRT2, and to seek the interest and the input from the CCTLD community present. This session is on Tuesday afternoon from 12 to 1 o'clock, and it's open, like all other sessions from the CCNSO, it's open to everybody who's interested. So if you are interested and to see how the CCNSO is dealing with this, you're more than welcome and are invited to attend that one. A second one on accountability and in relation to the IANA stewardship transition, that discussion will take place on Wednesday afternoon. The CCNSO is having 2 days for internal discussions and to exchange view of and perspectives on, say, hot topics. So that's Tuesday and Wednesday. This discussion will take place on Wednesday afternoon from 2 to 3:30, again in the CCNSO room, and this is again open, and it will focus on the scope of say the IANA stewardship transition, because that's an issue for the CCTLD community, and also on the need to balance, say, the workload of these very important processes with other processes and other projects of the CCNSO. So that's going to be an interesting discussion from a CCTLD perspective. And this topic will be, again, is on the agenda for the joint CCNSO-GNSO meeting, for the meeting with the board, and for the meeting with the GAC. The GNSO meeting is it's a joint council's meeting, which is on Monday afternoon, with the board is on Tuesday morning, and with the GAC is on Tuesday afternoon. Next, and this is a bit a change of topic, but as Mary alluded to, say, cross-community working groups are becoming more and more important, and this is again an example which was initiated by the CCNSO, and where based on a previous work from what is called the study group, the council, the CCNSO council, invited the GNSO council and the GNSO to participate in a joint or cross-community working group to address some of the issues and to around the use of the names of countries and territories as TLD. It's based on the recommendations of this study group, and the first topic that an objective of the working group will be to review the representations of country and territory names and see how, say, the different categories of country and territory names, how they can be used as TLDs under the different policies for TLDs. So it's a bit of a comparison CCTLD and GTLD policies, and what would happen if somebody would apply for a country or territory name, whether it's a historical name or whether it's a current name, if it's a short form, etc. So it is hard work, and if this would work, and then the goal is to, and if the working group reaches a consensus around this, is trying to develop a kind of harmonized framework that could be applied across the different policies in order to increase the predictability on the use of the names of countries and territories as TLDs. What is important to note is this is limited to the country and territory names on the ISO 3166 list, so not every country and territory name is relevant. And secondly, it is about top-level domains, so it's not around second-level domains or lower level. The deliverables of the working group, but that is clear from itself. Some other activities the CCNSO is organizing, or which under the umbrella of the CCNSO. The interesting one is probably for those who are more interested in technical operational issues is what is called Tech Day, which is on Monday, and this will include a roundtable on name servers. So it's not just for CCTLD managers and operators, but is for the broader community, registrars and GTLD operators as well, especially for those, as I said, with a top technical and operational interest. So again, this one is open, and it will be, and you can, where it is, you can find on the agenda. If you look at the CCNSO meetings themselves, as I said, they are on Tuesday and Wednesday. There is a session on security, a panel discussion between the CCTLD managers, some CCTLD managers, and ICANN-accredited registrars, and it's focusing on how to standardize, if that's possible, one size that doesn't fit all, the CCTLD community do have different ways of operating, and it's one of the discussion points with internationally operating registrars is how can the CECs accommodate, or should they accommodate, internationally operating registrars. So that's quite an interesting session, and there is, as usual, the CCTLD news session. The sessions on this during the CCNSO have more a business, regulatory, and managerial focus, and to compare it with Tech Day. More information on the CCNSO you can find at the different and the slides, and look at it at your leisure. The only thing I want to add is yesterday the CCNSO Secretariat posted its first podcast introducing the sessions and some of the interesting sessions in London. So if you're interested, you can listen to it. And that's all. And now I want to hand over to my colleague, Barbara Roseman.
Thank you. Hello, you just wouldn't. Yes, I'd like to speak to the ASO Address Council work being done. The Address Council has 15 members currently, three from each region, and one person per region is elected each year. They've concluded that for the last round of elections, and there are a few new members on the Address Council, but many of the existing members have continued. The executive board of each RIR also appoints one person from its respective region, and that makes up the total of 15 people. This year, continuing also from last year, it was an ongoing process, marks the 15th anniversary of the creation of the ASO per the 1999 MOU that was replaced in 2004 with a new MOU, but we mark from the original date. At ICANN 50, at the London meeting, the ASO AC will be meeting formally, and that means they're going to hold their annual face-to-face meeting. Additionally, many of the NRO number council members will be in London, and those are the executives of the RIRs. The ASO plans to meet with the ICANN board, as they do at each ICANN meeting, and they will be briefing the ICANN community on 25 June from 1330 to 1500 in an open meeting. So I expect that will be a good time to catch up on their current activities. Their policy activities take place outside of the ICANN realm in the regional Internet Registry local meetings, the regional meetings. And some of the work that they've been doing recently is on advice on global policy, the post-exhaustion of the IPv4 allocation mechanism. This is a fairly arcane discussion that has to do with how IANA should process requests from the RIRs after the IPv4 allocations have met certain criteria, that is that, you know, they've depleted their allocations to a certain point. They're implementing this right now as the first of the RIRs, LACNIC, has declared that their inventory of IPv4 address space fell below their minimum requirements. And the IANA department immediately allocated each RIR about 2 million addresses, using about half of the recovered pool that they had. This will continue as addresses are returned to IANA and then given again to the RIRs. The ASOAC discussed the end of 16-bit autonomous system numbers, again, a fairly technical issue that has to do with how different organizations can handle different technical requirements for announcing their addresses. And the ASO determined that no change in policy can be made at this time, but that it should consult the regions on the impact of the runout and decide if new policy is needed. And I will now turn this over to Carlos Reyes to discuss updates with the Root Server System Advisory Committee.
Thank you, Barb. Hello, everyone. My name is Carlos Reyes, and along with Barbara Roseman and Steve Shang, We support the RSAC. Currently, the RSAC continues to make progress on its restructure effort. This has been an ongoing process for several months now. The operational procedures document is currently undergoing another round of edits and is nearing completion. This will help guide the RSAC. Also, a membership committee was established last November to evaluate potential members of the RSAC, as well as to recruit and evaluate applicants for the RSAC caucus. The RSAC caucus is essentially a cornerstone of this restructure effort, and the executive committee, in coordination with the membership committee, recently approved the working definition as well as membership requirements and an application process for interested and qualified parties so that they're able to join the RSAC caucus. Currently, the caucus formation is in an open membership phase, call for members, and the membership committee has distributed this information across various technical communities. The RSEC will be actively participating in the London meeting. There will be a public information session on Monday, June 23rd from 1:30 to 3, where there will be an update on its activities as well as an overview of the caucus application process. The RSEC will also have several working sessions throughout the week, and they are planning a meeting with the board. And with that, I hand over the presentation to my colleague, Julie Hedlund.
Thank you very much, Carlos, and thank you, everyone. This is an update on the ESSAC activities. Recent activities of note are a document just published yesterday that provides comments on the JAS Phase 1 report, and I'll talk a little bit more about that a little later now. We also have an IANA function stewardship transition work party, and other work parties include one on identifier abuse metrics and one on public suffix lists. We also have outreach to law enforcement representatives, and the ESSEC is developing a workshop for the 2014 Internet Governance Forum, and there is a link directing you to where the ESSEC reports are published. We do have several events in London. We have a beginner's guide for DNSSEC, and everyone is welcome to that. It's on Monday, the 23rd of June, from 5 p.m. local time in the Thames Suite. And we have the DNSSEC workshop on Wednesday, the 25th of June, beginning at 8:30 a.m. local time in Hilton 1 through 6. And then there is the usual ESSEC public meeting, which will be held Thursday, the 26th of June. That will begin at 8 a.m. at Sandringham. And filling in for my colleague Steve Sheng, I would like to say a few words about the document just published, SAC 66. It is an ESSEC comment on the JAS Phase 1 report on mitigating the risk of DNS namespace collisions. A little bit of background. Some of the issues that the ESSEC was considering is what is namespace collision, and that is where a name that is defined and used in one namespace may also appear in another. And users and applications intending to use a name in one namespace may use it in a different one, and that may result in unexpected behavior where the intended use of the name is not the same in both namespaces. And a little bit more background, the circumstances that lead to a name collision could be accidental or they could be malicious. In the context of TLDs, the conflicting namespaces are the DNS namespace reflected in the root zone and any other namespace, regardless of whether that other namespace is intended for use with the DNS or any other protocol. And here's a summary of the operational recommendations in the ESSEC comment. First, the ESSEC should expand the range of situations that would trigger an emergency response. instead of a single controlled interruption period, ICANN should introduce rolling interruption periods broken by periods of normal operation. ICANN also should perform an evaluation of potential notification approaches prior to implementing any notification approach. And continuing here, ICANN should implement a notification approach that accommodates IPv6-only hosts as well as IPv4-only or dual stack hosts. And ICANN also should provide clarity to registries on the rules and method of allocation of block names after the conclusion of the test period. The comment also included strategic recommendations, and summarizing these, ICANN should consider not taking any action solely based on the JAS Phase 1 report. In due course, it should publish information about not yet disclosed issues, and it should seek to provide stronger justification for extrapolating findings based on one kind of measurement or data gathering to other situations. And that ends my set of slides, and I would like to turn things over to my colleague Olaf Nordling for the GAC update.
Thank you very much, Julia, and hello to all. My name is Olaf Nordling, and I'm supporting the Governmental Advisory Committee, or GAC for short, which is a committee with no less than 135 governments as members and 30 IGOs, which Mary introduced as a notion, as observers. And it's growing by the day. It's actually today 137 and counting. The GAC will certainly meet in London face-to-face, as they always do at ICANN meetings, and those meetings are very, very important because that's where the main decisions and the main advice is honed out. But, of course, they also conduct work between the sessions, these face-to-face sessions, through conference calls and through working groups and whatnot. And the mission of the GAC is, as you may be aware of, to provide advice to the ICANN board on public policy matters, or more strictly speaking, perhaps on public policy aspects on any matter. What are they up to in London then? Well, recently, and meaning the last few years, much of their work has been focused on the new GTLD program. And that's probably reaching the final touch, at least that's what can be hoped for. There are a few remaining issues to be ironed out, and Mary mentioned one regarding IGO protection. There are others, like a request to the board about explanations of the implementations of the safeguards that have been part of previous advice, and so on. But the expectation is that these few remaining issues could be honed out and finalized in London. There are plenty of other topics, of course, the high-profile ones like the IANA stewardship transition, as well as the ICANN accountability, are high up on the GAC agenda. Also, the framework of interpretation working group outcomes, or near outcomes, I should say, which Bart introduced earlier on, and who is always of interest to the GAC. So that will be debated as well, just to mention a few. And there has been, since around half a year, a very active joint GAC GNSO consultation group that will present its findings and also early proposals with a view to improving the early engagement of the GAC in GNSO policy work, really to avoid that there are last-minute surprises coming to the GNSO from the GAC. That's one of the objectives. So closer cooperation. And not to forget the ATRT2 recommendations, which is actually only one, recommendation number 6, but it consists of 19 sub-pieces or sub-recommendations, so there's quite a lot in that recommendation that are related to the GAC, and those will be addressed by the board GAC recommendations implementation working group, BGRIWG, aren't we good at acronyms, together with two GAC working groups on working methods and government and IDO engagement strategy. But that's not all. We, as earlier mentioned by David, the United Kingdom, which happens to be the country where London is, will host the second high-level governmental meeting in the history of the GAC. The first one was in Toronto, and this will happen on Monday in London, immediately following the opening ceremony, and it promises to be a very well-attended meeting. 100 governments have announced their participation, and 30 ministers are counted to be present as well. And yes, it will be an open meeting, but it will certainly, most certainly, be very crowded. So that is an opportunity, but come early, I would suggest, if you want to attend that one. There are also two dedicated information sessions for the community that has been scheduled. One is on geographic names. It's actually a subgroup to a working group that is dealing with the future GTLD rounds and trying to derive lessons learned and best practices to observe for the next round that will come at one point. And the geographic names sub-working group chair will present their findings to date and their suggestions to date. That will happen on Wednesday morning at 9. And we also have a GAC open forum, which is by where GAC members and the chair will make presentations to inform about not only how the GAC works, but also how preparations are done at home by the GAC members. And that one will start at 8:30 on Thursday morning in London. So the GAC has a very full agenda in London, starting on Saturday at lunchtime and concluding late morning, or rather late morning on Thursday. And most of the sessions are open. You're most welcome to the GAC meeting room, which is the Palace Suite, where you can enjoy it all. And in not only the six UN languages, we have interpretation from those, as well as Portuguese. So, very welcome. And with that, I conclude on the GAC side, and it's time for the ALAC. And I leave the floor to Heidi Ulrich to tell us more about that. Heidi, take it away.
Thank you very much, Olaf. Hi, everyone. My name is Heidi Ulrich. I'm the Senior Director for At Large. I'm based in the Los Angeles office. And today I'm very happy to present to you a very brief update on the policy activities of the 15-member At-Large Advisory Committee. Plus the At-Large Communities Atlas, the second At-Large Summit. So just a very brief intro to what the At-Large Community is. As I've mentioned, it is a 15-member advisory committee, the ALAC. And then there's also the five RALOs, the Regional At-Large Organizations. There are currently 178 at-large structures, and these together make up the at-large community. And this ALAC and the at-large community represent the views of the end users, internet end users. So to begin with the policy activities between Singapore and London, the ALAC submitted 14 policy advice statements and correspondences between these two meetings, or between Singapore and mid-June, including a record 10 in a four-week period. And the ALAC is currently developing three statements in response to public comments, and they are the fiscal year 15 operating plan and budget, enhancing ICANN accountability, and the ICANN draft five-year strategic plan. So among the statements that AILAC would like to highlight are the two comments that the AILAC submitted related to the transition of the stewardship of the AI functions. Both of these statements stress the need for the perspective of the end user to be included. The AILAC also submitted four statements related to the strategy panels. The AILAC stated their overall support for these panels, but they also suggested key additions. And one of those is the issue of crowdsourcing for obtaining broad-based input, which may be seen as an alternative to existing methods of reaching consensus on issues. However, they would like to stress that new techniques should not be seen as replacing the valuable policy process of collaboration and dialogue. And all AILAC policy advice statements are on the at-large correspondence webpage at the address listed on this slide. And there's also a summary produced each monthly policy update on all of the policy AILAC policy statements. So now I'd like to just turn my attention to the Atlas II, which is, again, the second at-large summit. And to begin with, what is this Atlas? So more than 150 globally diverse ALSs will be convening in London to discuss ICANN issues from the Internet end-user perspective. And similar to the GAC high-level meeting, this is only the second time in the history of the at-large community in ICANN that all ALS representatives will have the chance to meet face-to-face. And the first at-large summit was held during the ICANN meeting in Mexico City in March 2009. And this was an event of fundamental importance since it has become the foundation stone to the involvement of many of the ALSs in ICANN. And in fact, since that first at-large summit back in 2009, where there were about 82 ALSs, the size of at-large has doubled. In London, there will be over 150 at-large representatives. The theme of Atlas II is the global Internet user, the user perspective, and this theme will be discussed in various ways within the five thematic groups. These groups are going to have four parallel breakout sessions on Saturday, the 21st of June, and Sunday, the 22nd of June, and these groups will form the basis for the Atlas II discussions. Leadership teams have been created for each of the groups, and their output of the groups will form the core of the Atlas II declaration, which will be presented to the board on Thursday. And because of the importance of these groups, I'd like to take just a little bit of time describing what their themes are and what they're going to be working on. So to begin with, thematic group one is the future of multi-stakeholderism. This group starts with the premise that the future of multi-stakeholderism as a form of participatory democracy is promising. However, they note that multi-stakeholderism is not monolithic and must recognize the role played by different stakeholders on a variety of issues. While there are threats to multi-stakeholderism, the recent Mint-Lindell meeting provided one of the first examples of multi-stakeholder decision-making modalities. And some of the questions that this group will be exploring are what the current deficiencies in the ICANN multi-stakeholder model are, and also what ICANN can learn from the Mint-Lindell meeting, its processes, and the recommendations. Thematic group two is that on the globalization of ICANN, and this group will address the elements that are required for ICANN to be truly global. This includes ICANN providing a framework in which all global stakeholders are able to interact on an equal footing without barriers to participation. And questions to be discussed within this group address issues of inclusion and diversity, an equal global multi-stakeholder model, ICANN's constitutional and legal mechanisms, accountability mechanisms, and operational matters. The third thematic group is that of the global Internet, the user perspective. Again, that's the main theme of the entire summit. The focus of this group is on the key element of trust as a key Internet design principle. This group will discuss how the trust of users can be further developed. And questions to be addressed include whether end users will continue to enjoy the global Internet, especially given the current differences in Internet infrastructure, access, accessibility, et cetera, between developed and developing countries. Thematic group four is ICANN transparency and accountability. This group will focus on questions raised by the ATRT 2 final report, namely recommendation 9, which reflects the community feedback on existing appeals mechanisms, as well as recommendation 9.2, which addresses the accountability of the decision-making process and the reform of the appeal mechanism. And questions focus on how to strengthen the accountability and transparency of ICANN. Thematic group 5 is on at-large community engagement in ICANN. And this group will focus on the challenges of how the at-large community can effectively engage with various ACs and SOs. And questions that this group will focus on include those on increasing engagement and breaking down the silos between the various groups, as well as on what types of capacity building are needed in order to increase the ability of the ALSs to engage. So in sum, the Atlas II is a very rare opportunity for ICANN's global end user community to meet, learn, discuss, mentor, and influence policy. So then I'd like to talk a little bit about how it was prepared. The Atlas II has been organized in a bottom-up fashion by the at-large community. It's been truly an at-large community process. And the organizing structure consisted of an Atlas II organizing committee, co-chaired by Eduardo Diaz and Olivier Carton-Leblon, as well as 9 Atlas II working groups. And to date, these groups have held a total of 50 preparatory calls, as well as countless hours of volunteer time to prepare the meeting schedule, agendas, background, material, et cetera. So they've really been working for almost a year on this summit. And preparatory activities prior to the start of the summit included a series of 8 Atlas II capacity building webinars for the at-large structures, many of which will not have attended an ICANN meeting. And these included community and staff experts presenting on topics such as the future of Internet governance, policy development, policy issues, security and stability, and the ALS rules of procedure. There have also been 5 newsletters, Atlas II newsletters, 4 to date have been published, and 1 more is on its way. And, they have been produced by the Atlas II Communications Working Group, and there will also be a daily newsletter during the summit itself. Also, an Atlas II website, also developed by the Atlas II Communications Working Group, was launched earlier this week. And this website contains information on both the content and logistics relating to the Atlas II, and that is at the site that is on the slide. And I encourage you to take a look at that. That's really a one-stop shop for all activities related to the summit. Also, there's an exciting at-large social media strategy that has been developed and implemented for Atlas II using Facebook and Twitter. There will be a very active social media presence during the summit, and in fact, it's already started using the hashtag Atlas II, and you can see that information on the sticker, the graphic on the slide. Also, a promotional or welcome video has been produced and has been widely distributed. And in preparation for the Atlas II, most of the ALSs have filmed interviews on Skype describing their activities, and that is now on YouTube. And you can take a look on what actually all of these ALSs are working on related to the Internet. And finally, thanks to both the Atlas II sponsorship working group and the generosity of 3 sponsors, there has been $40,000 in additional funding provided to the Atlas, which will allow for a sponsored lunch, dinner, and an Atlas fair and networking event. Now turning to actually the activities happening at the summit, there'll be a lot. As you can see on the slide, first there'll be 5 plenary sessions, which will include addresses by senior ICANN staff and board members, as well as a discussion on the thematic issues. These are going to be taking place Saturday, all day Saturday, Sunday, and Thursday morning. Then, as I mentioned, there are these 5 thematic groups. We're going to be holding 4 breakout sessions on Saturday and Sunday. Also, there'll be each of the 5 regional at-large organizations will be holding face-to-face general assemblies to discuss policy and process issues of importance to their RALO. These will be taking place on Tuesday and Wednesday. An at-large fair, or you might know it as a showcase, but this is a bigger event. And this will be held on Tuesday, the 24th of June, between 19:30 and 21:30. And the keynote addresses will be given by Nena Nwakanama, African Regional Coordinator of the World Wide Web Foundation, and Wilson Convector, ICANN Board Director. There's also, as usual, there will be an at-large quiz, music, and cocktails. And again, you're going to be welcome to all of these events. They're all open, so please do come along. And in addition to the Atlas and at-large meetings, the ALSs will be meeting with the board and attending other meetings going on through London. So you'll be able to see them and identify them by their purple ribbon that says Atlas II participant on their name tag. And also an Atlas II mentoring program developed by the Atlas II Mentoring Working Group is in place and will hold their orientation on Saturday in London. And this program will allow a large number of ALS representatives to learn directly from the at-large leaders. And finally, an Atlas II declaration, which will be the primary output of the Atlas II, will be presented to the board on Thursday, the 26th of June, and it is expected that this declaration will form the basis of the post-Atlas II development of the at-large community. So this concludes the at-large or Atlas II update, and I hand the floor over to David Olive for questions and answers. Dave.
Thank you, Heidi, and members of the policy team for your presentation and the information you shared with members of the community and people on this webinar. We're now moving to a question and answer session. Again, for those who may not be in the Adobe Connect room to place a question in the chat, we're going to try this new system. Please press star 1, and the operator will take your name and put you into the queue. Again, star 1 for questions. With that, as you're thinking of that, I would just want to point out that in addition to the questions in the chat, in your registration form, we also asked for some questions that you may have of us. And some of them were submitted here, and what we tried to do is, since many of them might have been directed to the new GTLD program or to legal or to others, we tried to show where you can find answers to those questions at the various sessions at I-1050 with citations to that. And here we are with some of the reports, questions about a recent report on supporting the domain name in underserved regions. There will be some sessions on ICANN London to talk about this, as well as some changes in the dispute and arbitration mechanisms. With that, are there any questions in the queue, operator?
No, sir, there are not. But once again, star 1 if you have a question, and please record your name when prompted. Star 1.
As you may be thinking of questions, we'll give you some time to do that. I'd like to point out the best way to stay updated on the policy development and policy advisory activities within ICANN would be to subscribe to our monthly report. This is in not only English, but the UN languages mentioned here. We have over 7,000 subscribers to our monthly report. And you can easily do that and have it sent to your mailbox and have it ready for you on a monthly basis. We provide also a kind of summary of public comments that are currently pending at that time, as well as some of the activities that we highlighted here in greater detail. Let me also point out the hard work of your activities as volunteering for various ICANN working groups and activities are also supported by the 23 members of the ICANN Policy Development Support Team, as we do support, as you see in this presentation, the supporting organizations as well as the advisory committees. And more importantly, they're supporting your efforts and hard work as you input into various processes, in particular policy development processes at ICANN. And this lists them and their locations around the world. I head that team, and I am based in Istanbul, Turkey, heading the regional headquarters here. On occasion, we do do a wrap-up session at the end of each ICANN meeting. Here is one in particular. We were celebrating the office in Istanbul. So we do have some fun. Robin Gross was talking about the various working parties or parties working. Well, this was more of a wrap-up session. So we thank you for those comments. I'll again check to see if there are any other questions that you have, operator.
No, sir, we do not.
With that, I will remind you that the audio, the transcripts, and the PowerPoint slides will be available to you on the site that we mentioned in the chat. And with that, we'll either see some of you in person in London, or we'll listen to you online as you participate remotely, or we'll be in touch with you on various monthly and regular working group calls. We thank you for your time and participation and for allowing us to present some of the latest information on the policy development and policy advisory activities in ICANN in advance of the ICANN 50 meeting in London. So with that, on behalf of the policy team, we say thank you. We'll be in touch. We'll talk to you again soon. And I wish everyone a good evening, good afternoon, or good morning, wherever you may be. Thank you very much.
That does conclude today's conference. Thank you all for joining. You may now disconnect.
Thank you.